Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, this is Don Alan Rico with Dr. Kenneth Ream and a special guest this morning, if we can get him. We welcome Idaho State Senator Stephen Thane, and our topic this morning, 30-minute discussion on foot with the foot expert online. We discuss topics that can keep your feet healthy and affect your overall health. Our topic this morning is healthcare and how it affects the health of your feet. Good morning, Dr. Ream.
Hello, good morning. Good morning, both of you.
We're still waiting for Senator Thane to get online, but we'll get started.
Well,
how's that?
You know what, Don? You call it health care. Are we really caring for our health? And that's really the situation, and we're going into a situation where a trend where I'm not sure that our health is being taken care of. And I know Senator Thane is really, really poised to deal with some of the political and economic and insurance questions relative to the trends that we're taking now. And I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Okay, absolutely. Yes, I've been working with Senator Thane for, well, probably the last 3 or 4 years. And he's been, and in fact, they're in session right now. He was gracious enough that he said he could be on this morning. I'm not sure if something came up or not. But the thing of it is he's been working with a proposition. Proposition 2 in Idaho this year was he's on. Let's put him on. Okay.
Good
welcome,
morning,
Senator Thane. Good morning.
Well, thank you.
Hello, Senator. How are you? Ken Ream here.
Yeah, Ken. Good. How are you doing?
Good. You know, we have a podcast every Tuesday, and we focus on the health of the foot. But, you know, the foot is attached to the rest of the body, and therein lies the importance of a good plan of health care, not disease care, but health care. And I know that you are one of the country's best experts on formatting a design for the proper care. We've talked before, and I just want people to be aware of what's going on and what is trending in the world of healthcare. Now, I mean, I get scared seeing all the broadcasts on television and Medicare for All, and seeing the undocumented populations come into the United States and getting care, and I'm on the front lines. I'm in San Diego, and I service several clinics that deal with the patients that come over that are undocumented. And I don't know if America sees what I'm seeing, and that's the purpose of me wanting to bounce these questions and statements off of you and seeing your response. It's a mess. And there are very few doctors speaking out. And do you see where the purpose of my call and the passion behind the public knowing what's really going on?
I think I do. Yes, absolutely. There maybe we can break it up into two different segments. The one segment is the delivery of health care, which I'm probably more conversant on than the second question, which is, what do we do about illegal immigration and providing health care to those that may be ill and, you know, can't afford it from other countries? So I'd just soon talk about the first one first, if I could.
Sure.
And that's the delivery of health care. So as Don Allen knows I believe one of the greatest challenges facing any country, any society, is as that society matures, power tends to migrate away from individuals to institutions. And how that's done is responsibility and resources tend to flow away from individuals and families to hospitals, government, insurance companies, banks, universities, you name it. And the reason is that institutions have a longer lifespan and they get themselves in a position to get subsidies or write the rules of the game so they benefit from them. And that's happened in healthcare. Right now, hospitals tend to be at the front of the line when it comes to who gets paid. We have and you pointed out, we don't have a wellness system, we have a sickness system. Hospitals and other providers, but especially hospitals, get paid for sickness. So, people might ask, well, how do you turn that around? Well, you focus on prevention, and prevention takes place at the primary care level. And so, healthcare is about relationships, good health. What most people don't recognize or know is that between 60% and 70% of all medical costs, are because of lifestyle choices, smoking, overeating, lack of exercise, stress. So it doesn't make sense for the government to get involved in providing access to hospitals where sick people go if you want to reduce the cost and make people healthier, which requires them to be engaged. So there has to be ways to get people engaged in their own health care because they're the ones making the choices that lead to high medical costs. Obviously, there's always cancers and accidents and things that happen. But I'm not talking about those things.
But even these diseases, Senator Thain, even these diseases are subject to prevention. And where the prevention takes place along the line, whether it's many years before the disease shows up or after the disease shows up and preventing manifestations, there's still prevention that needs to be motivated by the primary care physician, and yet the community should be part of it.
Yeah, and so when we get to health care and providing health care to the poor, which is Medicaid, there's a lot of questions. We've got people who say, well, these folks need access to hospital care, they need access to primary care, and we just need to provide it for them. And in Idaho, we're trying to go a little bit different direction. We recently had Proposition 2, which the voters said we want to Medicaid, to expand Medicaid. And what I'm suggesting is a little add-on to that, because Medicaid has a design flaw. And the design flaw is you have to stay poor in order to maintain your eligibility. So there's some people who get up to between 120 and 140% federal poverty level that start asking the question, can I afford to work another 5 hours a week or earn another dollar an hour and possibly lose my food stamps and Medicaid and then have to start paying my deductibles and co-pays? And so they ask themselves the question, am I better off working less? And that's what we're trying to address. So it's not maybe really the question you're asking, but does what I just said of any help in the questions that you've had?
Well, yeah, I was very frustrated, so I wanted to bring you aboard to see what answers we have. So whether they're undocumented or the indigent that come into the clinic and come into the office, the people come in with very, very sick problems. They are very sick people. They are diseases that need attention. They are the sickest of the sick. And when they come in, they get Band-Aids put on their sickness. And and not only that, but people come in and expect regular health care. They're not getting regular health care. They're getting fake health care. And they're getting health care that they expect and demand. And it's the demand and expectations and the quality of care that they're getting and the level of sickness and disease that we have to treat, because prevention has – a lot of these people come in, they've never been seen by a doctor. How are we going to handle all the people that we can economically? Let's talk just from a business point of view. Let's talk from an economic point of view. And then there's language barriers, and there's motivation barriers. So, yes, it's nice to have prevention and classes, but how are we going to get people to attend these things? We're speaking to the choir. Are you sensing some of the problems I'm having?
Yeah, I think I am. Let me ask you a couple of questions to clarify a little bit. One, when you talk about a clinic, what kind of clinic is it? Is it a private clinic? Is it a federally qualifying healthcare clinic, FQHC?
Federally qualifying healthcare clinic.
Okay, so I've been told, and you can let me know or not, one of the problems with the FQHCs is that the patient comes in and basically gets the next doctor up. There's not necessarily a relationship formed between – you don't see the same patients, you know, every time they come in. It's more like – is that correct or not?
Well, in the FQHCs, they try to bond a patient with a primary care and as a specialist, as a podiatrist. I can reappoint the people, and yes, we do develop relationships. But the problem I'm having is my access to treatment is limited. You know, I have to refer out if a surgery needs to be done or the prevention models. We don't have a process for delivering diabetic shoes. We don't have a process for putting people on diabetic prevention programs and diet and the compliance issues, the expectation issues. People don't show up for their visits. I mean, this is common. So you say, how do we handle regular healthcare? But any healthcare system that we devise has to address these fringe issues.
So let me ask you another question, because you really brought up, you know, not showing up for an appointment, it's an issue. A lot of those things are not being responsible for their own health and being actively engaged in it. And so that's a serious concern, especially with people in poverty who might not be in the habit of being responsible for various aspects of their life. So it's something that we definitely have to deal with. The question I have, when you talk about some of the diseases that people have, what diseases are you talking about specifically? Because I think of tuberculosis or some things like that. Are you talking about diabetes, or explain that a little bit more?
Most, by far, over 90% of the people I have at the clinic are diabetic, and their diabetes is out of control. And diabetes has so many manifestations of disease, whether it be the kidney, whether it be the eye, whether it be the heart, whether it be cardiovascular disease, whether it be the foot, whether it be neuropathy, whether it be the eyes. They come in. They have never managed their diabetes. Their culture doesn't encourage cation of diet. The cultural habits are so strong that they trump the desires to be healthy. Their knowledge, their academic thought process. Their language skills are such that we have a hard time communicating to on a deeper level with a lot of these people. There are so many problems that I'm stifled by and confused by that I want to incorporate some kind of answer for this.
So, and I probably won't give you an answer. I can give you some things that we're thinking about in Idaho that could have some application, but mostly I'm just trying to understand where you're coming from. So let me repeat. You said, I believe, that 90% of the people that come into the clinic have diabetic issues. Did you say that, 90%?
Over 90%, yes.
Wow. So another question.
Don't forget, some of them are recent, within the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Some of them are very recent. I had a person come in with diabetes the other day that had the electronic monitor device on their ankle, especially over the border, undocumented, coming in, and he had rashes and ulcers from the ankle brace that I had to treat. So some of them are, and he had diabetes, very severe diabetes. And here we are. We have to treat all this. How do we do this? How do we afford it? How do we incorporate it into our system? I want people out there listening to this, knowing how to frame this in their mind so they could vote properly. How do we do this? You're in the crux of the government. I'm in the crux of the medical care. We have to get together. There are very few doctors speaking out, and I want to kind of start a coordination between the politics and the doctors now. How do we address these things?
That's a good question, I guess. What ideas do you have?
Well, you know, I think we have to vote. I mean, I don't want to get overly political, but we have to have a system of immigration. I mean, we have to have expectations and like a business plan for this. The second thing is that we have to have community-based situations where there is enough resources to absorb the wealthy with the poor. You could frame it like a school system, only a healthcare system where communities are funded by the community. Schools are funded by multiple areas of funding, local taxes, state taxes, city taxes, private funding, even grants from Medicare for different programs. And so I picture this more of a community thing, but I don't have an answer. I'm asking somebody who is active in developing healthcare system and is promoting it. I'm asking you, you obviously have to be aware of some of these things that are going on, and plus these immigrants are coming in expecting healthcare, expecting it. This is the United States. They are expecting it, and they demand it. And if trends continue in this way, we are in danger as a healthcare system.
So let me share with you a couple of impressions that I have. First, San Diego, which, as you point out, is at the heart of this, you know, you're on the border. Boise,
absolutely,
Idaho, where I sit right now, we have two states between us and the border. So we're not experiencing an immigration problem to the degree that you are. In fact, most of the people that make it up here are actually wanting to work. And so we don't have this type of problem flooding our clinics. Now, we do have a problem with poverty and lack of access to health care, so there is some similarity there. And so let me share with the listeners kind of how Medicaid works and what Medicaid expansion is about and what I'm wanting to add to that. It'll take probably about 5 minutes, I suppose, and then you can comment.
I have open ears.
Okay, well, Medicaid, as most people know, is a federal-state partnership program to provide health care access to those under 138% of the federal poverty limit. So that it depends on where you are, what that FPL, federal poverty limit, might be. But I had someone tell me yesterday he couldn't earn over $15,000 in order to qualify for food stamps, which is almost the same eligibility level. Now, in Idaho, because we didn't expand Medicaid, people under 100% of the federal poverty level didn't have any access to health, any state access to health care. They either had to figure it out themselves or go without. And so the legislature had been trying for 6 years, at least I had, to try to come up with an alternative to Medicaid expansion, which we didn't do. And so the voters voted to expand Medicaid, which basically puts healthy adults or working adults earning less than 138% of the FPL on Medicaid. So Medicaid is basically a health insurance product funded by the state and federal government. The concern I have with Medicaid, as I expressed a little earlier, is that food stamps end at 130% of the FPL, and after 138%, you go off Medicaid and you get an Affordable Care Act, maybe silver policy, where you have deductibles of maybe $1,000 or you pay 10% of. So the idea, basically, on Medicaid, you have almost free medical care as soon as you get over 140%, 138%. You start having co-pays and deductibles, plus you've lost your food stamps. So for some people, like college students who might be on Medicaid, and they graduate and they get a job, they jump from 138% of FPL to 250%, 300%. And so they make that, they cross that chasm pretty quickly. But in working with the poverty folks here in Boise, they tell me that someone needs to be earning about 180% of the FPL in order to really have enough money to start clawing themselves out of poverty. Anything less than that, they're just subsisting. So what I've suggested is we find people who self-identify that are can make more money, but they're afraid to because they'll lose these benefits, and say, we'll supply some access to health care, particularly primary care, because that's the prevention side. If they agree to work with a nonprofit organization to work to that does a survey of their needs, do they need training? Do they need financial literacy class? Whatever it is they might need, and so they'll walk with them for 6 months to a year and help them cross over from 138% to 180%. So what we're trying to do with that, long story short, is we're trying to help people become economically self-sufficient. So that's the expectation, that anybody on a government program needs to move to the point where they're economically self-sufficient. And under current thinking, especially with Medicaid, a lot of these federal programs, there's no expectation of becoming self-sufficient. So that's the very first thing. People, and the gratitude thing is really important too, because if people have an entitlement mentality, they have a victim mentality, and they're not taking responsibility for their own life. So that is really a critical factor. We have to encourage as many people as possible to step into gratitude and away from entitlement. And
how do we do that?
They have to self-identify. You have to believe that people want to improve their lives, and they really don't want to be stuck on welfare, food stamps, and And some people will never leave that you know, poverty because they've been there too long. So you have to allow them to self-identify. Okay, so you have to allow them to self-identify and then provide actually more benefits in a different manner than what the federal poverty programs do. That just provides some crumbs to the poor without actually allowing them to get to the point where they can take care of themselves. So there's not going to be any quick fix to what we're talking about. But I can tell you with a program that's based on some similar, on these same principles in education in Idaho, we went from like 5,000 kids participating. Last year there's 32,000 kids participating. We allocated money directly to them, and they see the opportunity to take college classes in high school. And so they're self-identifying. They're pulling their friends along. More and more people are saying, yeah, this is a great opportunity. So it's a long-term process, but it begins with the vision in mind. That's really where it begins. What are we trying to do? Are we just trying to Band-Aid a situation, or what's the long-term solution? So we haven't even got to your second question about immigration, but I think,
call it one. Call it people. Call it the indigent, wherever they are. We have to address the mentality and the motivation to stay healthy, as well as the insurance part of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so that's the first step is to say, you know, we have a vision. We're trying to help these people escape poverty. In order to do that, they have to have a plan. They have to probably need someone to walk with them, which I think the privates, you know, the nonprofits and non-government money can do that a lot better than the government sector. The government sector can provide some resources like access to health care, but it's not very good at having a personal relationship at the level that people need it, because it needs to be individualized. Government is not very individualized. So there needs to be, but there has to be a vision of what we're trying to accomplish. And I think that's what's lacking in the conservative liberal debate is, you know, conservatives complain about government doing too much, and the liberals are, you know, wanting to have government do more. And that's really not the issue at all. It's what can we do to build people so that they're capable. Yeah. So that's the first point of agreement that we have come to. Are we trying to build people or government agencies?
Boy, that's well said, and I want to just let that soak in, because we have to treat the people and not the healthcare system, it's not a healthcare system. You bring out some great points. That this is terrific. How could people? You have a podcast. When is your podcast, Senator Thing?
We haven't done one for a couple of weeks. We usually do it Friday mornings, don't we, Don?
Yeah, yes, it is. And you've been you're starting in legislation the legislative session, which keeps you quite busy. We're grateful to have you this morning. So,
well, it's a pleasure to be here. And Ken, I've enjoyed visiting with you too, and getting a sense of some of the frustrations and issues that you face. It's disturbing, but at the same time, reality is reality, what it is.
I want the legislature and the public to know some of the frustrations really down here on the ground with patients. It's very, very frustrating. You go into a room to see a patient and your hands are tied by many, many factors. This is great, Senator Thane. You've really added a lot of insight to the whole situation.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Good. Thank you very much.
All right. Hey, Senator Thane, thanks for being with us this morning, as well as Dr. Kenneth Rehm, the foot expert online. Remember to keep your feet healthy and join us next week. Thanks again, guys, for being with us.
Attention to prevention. Thank you.
The Foot Expert Online is a production of Q Ford Productions, copyright 2019, Kenneth Ream, all rights reserved.